Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Since it was the Halloween season, I thought I would share a small legend that occasionally makes its way around town where I live. There's a lot of dense forests here in the Seattle area, and people like to tell stories about a tall, hairy creature that walks between the trees at night. There's a lot of Bigfoot rumors around here, but they say it's definitely something else. More like the Michigan Dogman or some kind of werewolf. The big difference is that it has an animal skull for a face, with sharp rows of teeth and large empty eye sockets. Or at least, that's what the people say. See, the thing is that the legend says it doesn't like to be watched, and it recognizes and avoids all kinds of cameras. Convenient, I know. This, combined with other details that I mentioned later, leads me to believe that this cryptid could have been a regular person at some point. Anyways, the story goes that it lives deep in the forests near Seattle and Bellevue, watching hikers from a distance and feeding off of deer and wild berries. These food sources can be inconsistent, though, which leads to the main risk that I'll get into after the introductions. Most reported sightings are around Coal Creek, so that's probably where you'd want to go if you're looking for it. That's also where it gets its most common name, the Coal Creek Demon. Some people say that it's a vengeful spirit from the long-lost mining settlement that used to be there. But that sounds a bit too melodramatic to me. I'd say it's probably the result of some freak accident, but I'm not a scientist or anything, so who knows. There's no real reward for encountering this so-called demon that I've heard of, but if you want to seek it out anyways, here's what you need to do. Results are far from guaranteed. It could only be in one place at once, and it doesn't live to serve your interests. If nothing else, it's a fun excuse to go camping with some friends. Required supplies. To conduct this ritual, you'll need a gift, described below. Camping equipment. Flashlights. Blindfolds. A remote-activated light source. Some of these items are only necessary for certain approaches, so you could read ahead and decide what exactly you'll need to bring. Instructions. Step 1. Prepare a gift. This could be a metal token or some kind of trinket, but it's usually recommended to bring a nice meal consisting of red meat and berries. This is a very important step, because without a gift, it most likely won't show up, and if it does show up, you need to leave immediately. Step 2. Set up camp deep in the woods. If you could still see lights from other structures, you aren't far enough. You want to go in the late evening so that you could set everything up just before sunset. Step 3. Put away all recording devices and limit your light sources to your flashlights. You could also start a fire as long as it doesn't burn too bright. The idea here is to create a welcoming environment while also maintaining a protected area. Step 4. Set up your remote activated light source a few feet away from the edge of your camp and place your gift next to it. keep the light switch on for now. Step 5. Sit back and relax. Once the sky is pitch black, you just need to wait for the sign. Feel free to chat and play games with anyone you brought along with you, just as long as you all have a clear view of the tree line. Step 6. Eventually, you might realize that something is observing you from the distance. It could be a tall shadow in the distance, a snapping of foliage, a sudden unnatural silence, or just the feeling of being watched if you believe in that sort of thing. If you notice any of these signs, it could very well mean that you've made contact. You're now ready to move on to the next step. Step 7. Stop all conversation and reduce your noise as much as possible. Switch off the light next to your gift and make sure your flashlights are pointed away from it. This is also where you need to pay close attention to these instructions, as any mistakes past this point will cause the demon to panic, which can have very dangerous consequences. Step 8. The demon should now approach your gift slowly. Stay calm and avoid any noises or sudden movements. Do not shine a light on it or take out any recording devices. If everything is done correctly, it will take the gift and briefly gaze at the people in your camp. However, if it ignores your gift and instead starts moving towards your camp, you need to get up and run to the nearest shelter you could find. Your lights will no longer matter, so just focus on moving as fast as possible. If you cannot find anything nearby, try to hide in the surrounding foliage. According to all known recollections, it can run much faster than any human, so whatever you do, do it fast. This is the point at which most would be content to stop. So if you've had enough, just stay in place until it makes a small bowing motion with its head and walks back into the forest. But if you're an idiot like my friend, you can continue through these next steps and potentially get a much closer encounter. I don't recommend it. In my opinion, you're just asking for trouble by now. Step 9. While this creature is near your camp, quickly eliminate all sources of light and put on your blindfolds. This is when it comes in handy to be using flashlights, since turning them off is much easier than dousing a fire. Step 10. The demon will now feel free to explore your camp and inspect you up close. You'll hear it rummaging through your supplies and pacing around you. You might even feel its breath on your face, but you need to remain calm and stay still. And whatever you do, do not remove your blindfold. This creature is known to be relatively passive towards humans if unprovoked. But if you happen to hear any sudden sounds of distress from your friends, immediately evacuate the area as described earlier. Step 11. Wait until it loses interest and walks away. Once you can no longer hear its footsteps, you're free to take off your blindfolds and turn your lights back on. You've now stood face to face with the cryptid and lived to tell the tale, so you've got some bragging rights with anyone who's willing to believe you. Like I said, there's no big reward. It's just mostly just about having the experience. Important notes. Now let's talk about the risks here. As you may have assumed by now, stories say that it has the occasional tendency to eat people, so there's that. However, based on my research, it seems only to do this when starved or provoked, so you don't have to worry as long as you play it smart. If anything, you should feel bad for the hikers who randomly run into this thing with no preparation. I'd recommend going out during the summer or early fall, since that's when the blackberries are in season and the wildlife is most active. That's just my theory, but most of the darker stories I've heard take place during winter, so I'd say it holds some water. Now, like I said earlier, there is a chance you could startle the demon and cause it to panic. I believe this is usually caused by it suddenly being caught in clear view by a person, so that's why you don't want to shine a light on it or try to record it. If it panics, then it'll...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Either run off in a hurry or attack the person watching it, mostly depending on how far away it is. That's why it's a stupid idea to let it walk around your camp, because one mistake could be enough to put you on a missing persons poster. Past encounters. People of the positive reception to this post. I decided to do more research on this thing. I found a lot of neat stuff, but there's too many stories to go about them all, so I'll just cover the big ones. The case of Brian Matthews. So back in 2004, this kid found himself in a bad situation. And I'm not just talking about him having two first names. At the age of 9, he's out on a hike with his parents, when suddenly they turn around and he's just gone. I don't know what they were doing having him in the back of the line, but that's not the point here. Obviously, they're immediately panicked and running around yelling to him. When that didn't work, they went to the police. Within a few hours, park rangers were sweeping the area, and after 2 days with no results, they brought in the National Guard. While they were out searching on day 3, the kid turns up, but not by the cops. Instead, a group of backpackers find him sitting on a tree stump 20 miles north from where he went missing. When they brought him in, he was healthy and well-fed. When they had asked where he had been, he just said that he was playing with a friendly bear he had met. When shown an artist's sketch of the Coal Creek Demon, Brian immediately identified it as the creature he was talking about. Articles quote him as saying, "Did you meet him too, when he first saw the sketch?" In my opinion, this is a pretty big boom for the ex-human theory, unless there's some species of wild animal that just so happened to have a habit of caring for human children like a parent would. Stephen's camping trip. Now, as I mentioned briefly, my friend Stephen carried out this whole process and ended up getting in over his head. At the time, we were graduating high school, and he went on a camping trip with some other seniors to celebrate. I would have joined, but I was down with COVID at the time, so that was a no-go. Besides, I wanted to give him some space since I knew he had feelings for one of the people going. I should have seen it coming that he would try to do something stupid to try and impress her and screw up massively. The group was telling ghost stories around the campfire one night, so he brought up this ritual, and of course some of the people wanted to try it. He didn't want to look like a wuss, so he just went along with it. Once they started to get things rolling, most of the group checked out and walked down to the beach instead, including his crush. It was way too late for him to back out then, so he just won the award for a world's biggest backfire. So at this point, it's almost pitch black outside. The four remaining people are putting beef jerky on a paper plate, and Steven's just trying to keep his pants dry. They sit out with the plate for a while, and just as they were about to call it quits, the thing actually shows up. Everyone here is totally paralyzed, but they still move on to the dousing of the fire and wrapping the bandanas over their eyes. I could only assume their brains were just running on autopilot by this point. Now it's pacing around the camp, slowly rustling through their bags and inspecting them one at a time. When it gets to Jack, this really wiry kid with red hair, apparently its breath hit his face and makes him jump in his seat, shaking off his blindfold in the process. The whole group hears a dry shriek and takes off their blindfolds just in time to see him get thrown into the tree line, and they all bolted out of there. Steven went and ducked behind a big log, spending about 20 minutes huddled in a ball and freaking out. When he had heard footsteps approaching, he thought that he was done for, only to see that it was the rest of the group coming back from the beach. He ran up to them and started incoherently rambling about what was going on, but he realized that the demon was completely gone. Imagine walking back from the beach only to find the people you left there cowering in shrubbery and rambling about a giant monster that isn't there. I wouldn't even know what to think. Of course they didn't believe him, even though Jack was covered in bruises and scratches. I guess they thought it was some sort of elaborate prank and they just ended up being pissed. I wouldn't have believed him either, if it weren't for the fact that I know he could never orchestrate something like that if he tried. Overall, it was a very bad night for Steven. And that's all I've got. If I remember anything else worth mentioning, I'll be sure to update this page. Thank you for reading and good luck out there. Bucket. The story begins when my lifelong friend Henry began to take an interest in the paranormal. He would just sit around for hours at a time, just reading up on people's encounters with the dead, cryptids, and other subjects of the nature. His main focus, however, was in rituals. He would go on and on about this vague sequence of events one would follow, usually ending in a scary or odd payout. One day, however, he came across an elixir made of some fairly basic herbs that, when ingested, caused the user to go beyond the normal area humans could travel. By this, it meant the user would fall into a trance where they would be able to talk to those who had passed and those who never were. I was always fairly open-minded to this, simply thinking that he thought of these stories as to read for a cheap scare. In fact, I was starting to enjoy them myself. However, when Henry suggested that we should make this elixir, I was extremely skeptical. I thought either it would kill him due to it being a poison, or mess his mind up beyond repair. But he always insisted that he saw people on YouTube making it and ingesting it, so I should stop worrying. I gave in and said whatever, but Henry insisted that I came along when he took the elixir. I caved in. I thought having a friend around while he did it would make it slightly better, so at least I could take him to the hospital if he started vomiting blood. The day of, he was clearly nervous. His skin was pale and he was shaking. He had a cold sweat running down his face. He insisted he was all right, and he had already made the elixir. He called it Le Pichon de la Verdad, which in Spanish for the Potion of Truth, Spain being the original of this potion. Because he was afraid he would hallucinate for about 5 minutes and totally flip out. We planned for him to take the potion in the forest behind Henry's house to prevent the unnecessary drama while his parents were home. We came to a secluded part of the forest only a few people ever visit to smoke illegal substances, and Henry took the elixir. It was as brown as mud, but wasn't as viscous. Its smell was odd. The only way I could explain it is it's similar to the smell you get before a nosebleed. Henry forced down the liquid, and his face scrunched up. He swallowed it, but just barely. We sat there in silence for about 10 seconds. Our eyes met. Henry shrugged and looked around. After that, he immediately fell over, his eyes still open. I checked his signs, and they all seemed to be in working order. But the odd thing was, he wasn't entirely passed out. His eyes darted around in shock, and his heart raced. He tried to yelp, but it came out as a slight sigh. Before Henry took the substance, he had told me to wait 20 minutes before calling the ambulance if something went wrong. His heart may have been beating fast, but it wasn't at the point of alarm.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
After 10 minutes of what seemed to be paralysis, Henry suddenly snapped out of it. He sat up and our eyes met. His eyes were wide and there were tears in the corners of his eyes. He said one thing to me. I saw them. Immediately what I asked was who? Henry couldn't bring himself to answer. Naturally, it wasn't as much as he couldn't bring himself to answer. It was more the fact that there wasn't much of Henry there to answer. His eyes were wide, but he seemed unresponsive to my question. His skin was paler and clammier than ever. Afraid that the elixir was still in his system, I brought him to the hospital. They ran some tests on him, but doctors found nothing in his system. It wasn't that the substance was distracting him from reality. There just wasn't enough of Henry left in consciousness to respond. I stayed by his side for what seemed like decades, though in reality, it was probably around a couple of hours when Henry finally said something. In a weak voice, he simply said, "Brian, make it leave." Being the first words he had spoken in over 5 hours, I jumped to the occasion and shouted, "What? What, Henry?" He looked at me with vacant eyes and said, "The thing that never was." He immediately passed out and didn't awake. For the next couple of days, he was pronounced comatose. He didn't say anything or move an inch. He simply wasted away. The once bright face turned to pale skin and blue lips. One change in the room that was clearly felt was the feeling. It turned cold. Not a chilly cold, but an absence of warmth, almost as if the heat from the room was being pulled towards a point in the room. After a while, it caught my attention. Whenever I looked towards the cold spot, I would get a pit in my stomach, almost as if it was staring back at me angrily. Eventually, my curiosity piqued. I walked over to the spot and put my hand through. What I felt, I can hardly explain. My arm tensed up and started to lose all of its warmth. There was a clear line where my skin tone turned from slightly tan to a cool shade of light blue. I pulled away, but the skin tone didn't change. It still hasn't. I looked into the void of coldness, and what stared back at me were small, bright red eyes. It didn't stare into my eyes, but at a part of me I thought unreachable by eyes. I felt it searching my very being, and at this point I stood up and ran out of the room. I sat outside the hospital door, curled up against the wall. I felt the heat from the hospital hallway rush under the door towards that thing. I looked through the window of the door to find a dark figure looming over Henry. It was still translucent, but it clearly had a physical presence in this world. It had long, gangly arms and legs and a hunched, slender chest. Its face was long but caved in, with ears pulled back like a stalking animal. But the most noticeable feature about this thing were its multiple mouths and rows of sharp teeth all around its chest that were opening and snarling. What happened next? I couldn't believe. As the figure became more and more clear, it began to suck out what seemed to be a white vapor from Henry. After what seemed like an eternity of me staring at this thing, the white vapor no longer came from Henry. His head turned to one side and the air escaped from his lungs. Henry had died, and the monster triumphed. By now, it was completely opaque. It let out a mighty roar and turned its head towards me. Our eyes met and I stood paralyzed. It was only a moment, but it was a moment that I'll never forget. After that, it jumped out of the hospital window and it was gone. Henry was dead. When Henry went to where the living were not supposed to travel, he was followed back by a spirit whose horrid purpose denied its right to exist in this world. This being may only survive by absorbing the souls of the living. Its purpose was not insidious, however. What draws it to do such a thing is the pure instinct put into every living thing. Survival. Because of Henry, this being has gained a physical form. The Beast of Givaudan was a large cryptid, undiscovered animal that was said to have been responsible for hundreds of attacks and killings of the people living in the rural regions of France during the 18th century. It was one of the few cryptids that had made a massive impact on the history of the world, and especially in France. The history of these attacks started with the Seven Years' War that was fought in 1764. It was fought between the Kingdom of Great Britain and the Kingdom of France before it ended in February of 1763. The citizens of the countryside in France were free from having to deal with the large taxes imposed by the government during wartime. Life seemed to return to normal after the war. But for the people of Givaudan, a region located in the southern province of Languedoc and nearby regions of France, something horrific will occur for the next 3 years. It began on June 30th, 1764, when a 14-year-old shepherdess named Jean Bollet was tending to a flock of sheep when she was later mysteriously found dead just outside her home near the forest of Givaudan. Villagers who found her body saw that her chest was badly slashed, with her heart being eaten by a mysterious predator. A few days later, another 16-year-old girl was found dead with severe injuries. Before she died from blood loss, she described her attacker as simply a beast. Soon, more and more animal attacks, many of which even involved slightly eaten bodies, started sprouting up all over the countryside of France. Even though during this period, human deaths were commonly caused by wolves, with the maximum number of cases being 100, they had not occurred in such a rapid period. The survivors described a wolf-like creature the size of a calf, with sharp teeth and reddish-brown colored fur, along with a black stripe along its back. It was reported to make a laugh-like cry. The victims were mainly women and children tending to their livestock or traveling along at night before the animal would aim for the throat before tearing them apart. The deaths and injuries continued, and the situation became so serious that it became a concern for the French government. King Louis XV declared that the beast should be hunted down and killed. He hired Jean-Baptiste Daumont to find the creature, but returned unsuccessfully. He was then replaced by a wolf hunter named Gerald and his 8 bloodhounds to kill the beast of Gévaudan. But he had also failed. Finally, the king hired his 71-year-old personal gun-bearer, Francion Andion of Paris. Of the 20th of September in 1765, Antion and his nephew shot a large gray wolf near an abbey in Chasis. Weighing at 60 kilograms, this wolf, nicknamed the Wolf of Chasis, was sent to be stuffed and displayed at the Parish Museum of Natural History in the King's Court, while Antion stayed behind to hunt down its partner and offspring. One of the cubs possessed a double set of dew claws. Assuming that the animal was the beast, the gun-bearer was awarded a payment of 9,000 livres, which is around $150,000 in U.S. money, as well as...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Fame. However, the attacks and deaths continued despite the event. They then seemed to stop on the 19th of June in 1767, when a local hunter named Jean Castiel shot the cryptid on the slopes of Mount Mochet, a mountain later renamed as Saugnie Drivers, along with the organized help of a nobleman named Marquis d'Echere. He killed it with a silver bullet, which contributed to the idea that the animal was a werewolf or supernatural demon. An autopsy was then performed on the beast before the specimen mysteriously disappeared or was lost. A scientific notary made by the king's men was later found in 1958, where it said that the creature was like a wolf, yet not a wolf. The beast possessed 36 teeth instead of the amount a normal wolf has. To this day, scientists and experts are still unsure of what the beast of Gévaudan was. Some say it was an abnormally large wolf or a pack of wolves, and others believed it was highly trained or rabid dogs, and even disguised as serial killers. Even though the fear of this creature faded over time, it had an enormous influence on our popular culture, and particularly that of werewolves. It was part of French history that still manages to both fascinate and terrify us to this very day. There is a major highway in the south of France that cuts straight through the site of the beast's attacks in what is now known as the Department of Lozère, a former county that replaced Gévaudan after the French Revolution. And there is even a museum dedicated to this historical account of this perplexing cryptid that is still open.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.